Hello, it's Denise here. Welcome to this sneak peek behind the curtain of our Patreon Second Cup tier, where members get exclusive access to bonus episodes of the Editing Podcast. Patreon is the only place you will ever hear these bonus episodes, but we're making this one, and only this one, free to everyone, so you can hear what you'll get if you join this tier. You'll always be able to listen to the Editing Podcast across all platforms for free, but for only £5 a month, you can access these bonus episodes. We're just at the beginning of this new tier, but we've lots planned for future episodes, including more conversations, bonus tips, and extra questions for our guests. To access this exclusive content, sign up for a second cup at patreon.com/editingpodcast. We'll pop the link in the show notes. So here's the bonus episode. Join Louise and me in conversation as we discuss our personal approaches to and experiences of building and updating our editorial business websites. Enjoy.
I'm Denise.
She's a non-fiction editor.
And I'm Louise.
She's a fiction editor. And together,
we're the Editing Podcast.
Hello, Patreon supporters. Here's another bonus episode just for you. So today we're chatting about websites, and Denise and I have decided that we're going to ask each other a few questions just to reflect back on a little bit of history and also how we're doing things now. So, Denise, when did you start building your editorial website, and would you do things differently now?
So I was thinking about this, and I didn't build my website immediately as soon as I started as a proofreader and editor. I think I probably did it about maybe even 2 years, actually, after I'd started. That would maybe be around about 2013, 2014, something like that. And yeah, I did it with Weebly, and it took me quite a lot to do that. I felt very, very apprehensive about doing it, because I thought as soon as I did it, I thought everyone in the world was going to see it and be poring over it with a fine-tooth comb.
Hitting that publish button was the scariest thing ever.
Really scary. And I'll be honest, sometimes it still feels like that even when I'm putting something new up on my website. What was the second part to your question?
I was wondering if you would, if you were setting up your business right now, would you wait?
No.
You know, like you waited a few years. Like, would you wait?
Absolutely not. No. And it's interesting because it's not that long ago. It was like, so 20, we're talking 12 years or so. But I think I think the industry and the market's changed massively since then. So I don't think you can afford to not have a website. And it's not difficult to do to have some kind of online presence. So I definitely would not hang about now. Wouldn't wait.
I'm the same. So when I first set up my editorial business, I remember a client I was working for at the time, he'd produced this beautiful coffee table book about mixed martial arts, and he wanted to come and do the edits with me because he was doing all the design himself. He wanted to come and do the edits with me live, so he came to my house.
No, really?
And he turned up, and he brought out his computer, like this huge monitor.
Oh my God.
With all this software on it. And he came and sat, and we sat in the conservatory, and we literally went through it line by line. And I said, how about changing this to that? And then he would make the changes because he wanted to do it in InDesign or whatever he was using at the time. And during the part of our conversation, he said to me, because he also, I think he also was an aside, apart from being a mixed martial arts specialist, he was also, you know, actually practicing. He used to do fighting. He was also a web designer, and he said, so have you got a website? And I said, nah, don't really need one.
And how long had you been working as a freelance editor?
So I think that, again, I would say I set up business in 2006. So I would say that was possibly at least 2009, 2010.
Wow.
I've got blog articles going back to 2011. So it must have been before that, but it was a good few years. And I really didn't feel that I needed one at the time. All my work was done by contacting publishers directly and by email or letter. And I didn't feel that I needed at that stage. And I probably didn't. But, you know, given the amount of work I had, I don't think my clients at the time were using a web presence to evaluate me or you in the same thing.
Yeah. I think that's the key thing, isn't it, really? Yeah.
Now, I can't imagine making the same decision because I'm hearing too much that one of the first things people do is, and it doesn't matter whether they're an indie author or they're a publisher, one of the first things they do is they go, okay, I've got an email from someone, but what's their online web presence look like? You know, how are they presenting themselves?
Absolutely.
To the world? And are they even maybe making judgments about the quality of my editorial work based on the way that I use words and present myself online?
Yeah.
So like you, I would absolutely do things differently now. And it kind of makes me laugh to think that I was so blasé about it then. But I think you said, the world was different. It didn't matter.
Totally. I think it's changed immeasurably since then. And also because we've got to remember, we're competing against other freelancers, whether we like to think of it like that or not.
Globally.
Globally, exactly. So, and it applies to everything that we're going to invest our money in. We Google it first. It's the first thing we do is,
I know.
Like my fence and my wall that fell down in the storms. First thing you do is you're online and you're looking for contractors and you're looking to see what their web presence is. And if somebody doesn't have one, and actually, I'll be honest, even if somebody only has like a Facebook page, I'm kind of thinking, I'd rather...
Are they a professional?
Yeah, I'd rather see somebody that's got a website because it shows me that they're taking it seriously, they've invested money in it, and they're thinking professionally like a business. Yeah. And I think we would all agree that we kind of apply that across the board, no matter what we're buying.
And also, I think that website, if I'm looking for an external contractor, I do judge people on how visually appealing their websites are. So if their homepage looks like a mess, if it looks like it's just been cobbled together and not thought about and isn't nicely designed, then it makes me think, it does make me judge them because it's a bit like if you receive a letter in the post and it's full of typos or something, or, you know, then I would think, well, is that person...
serious?
Are they serious? Are they responding to their professionally to their markets, their target audience in their market?
And I know we say, oh, you know, you don't judge a book by its cover. Well, sorry, but we absolutely do. First impressions matter. And I think we live in a digital age now. So, if you're at the beginning, I think if I was at the beginning of my freelance career and I was looking to promote my business, absolutely, you do all the stuff like we tell people all the time. You tell everyone you know, you tell your friends, you tell your colleagues that you used to work with, but you want to be able to give them a website to go to, even if it's just something really, really basic, because it sets your intentions, doesn't it?
It can be just one single page,
absolutely,
but as long as it's presented nicely and professionally. The other thing I just want to throw in here was about how things have changed is that it's not just that people are Googling information. Sometimes they're putting those search queries into AI things like ChatGPT.
Search has gone huge that way, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So we can't ignore that. And if you can't be found in those search spaces, whether it's to do with AI or whether it's a search platform like Google, if you're not there, then you can't be found.
Simple as. Yeah.
You're not as competitive as you could be. Okay, so here's another question then. Denise, does your website look different to how now to how it looked when you first set it up?
What do you think?
It's a rhetorical question because I know the answers, our listeners won't.
It's completely different. Apart from the fact I'm on a different platform now, I completely redesigned it. Now, that's not to say my first website was not terrible. It wasn't terrible because I had an online presence. It had some content on it. It had a couple of different pages. I built them out. It started off really simply.
What was terrible back then?
No, what's terrible now wasn't terrible,
Exactly.
But it was a very simple website, just with some basic information about me on a couple of different pages and the services I provided. Nothing fancy at all. And it just used some stock photographs, blah, blah. Wasn't complicated. And it was a drag and drop. It was actually on Weebly. It was a drag and drop. And I was surprised at how straightforward I found it. I was very relieved when I built it. And that did me fine for a few years. And then I decided that I got more established and I decided that I wanted to brand it properly. So I got some professional branding advice from your friend and mine, Ross Coverdale. And so that went hand in hand with getting a proper brand. I built a website on a WordPress and that took me, do you remember how long it took me? It took me ages because I was doing it myself. And all that time, my other website was still live, but I was in a membership community at that time that was geared towards helping you build your online presence and with content. So now my website looks totally different. It's properly and consistently branded. I'm much more conscious.
Can I just say,
what?
It looks so much better.
Yes, of course it does.
I remember seeing you showing me, it hadn't been launched at that stage, but you were just showing me behind the scenes and it was like night and day.
Yeah, yeah. It made such a difference. And it made such a difference to me as well, because I felt really proud of it, A, because I'd built it with some help, but B, because I felt it reflected who I was as a freelance editor at that point. It looked more professional. I felt more professional. And it also went much further in demonstrating to people what my skills were. So it was much more thorough in terms of how it was structured and the framework and how much content was there. And that's when I really started blogging more. And, you know, and then you can add pages, and then I added, you know, downloadables and stuff like that. So it looks completely, completely different, but it's still a living thing. It's still changing, you know. So what about yours?
Oh, yeah. I'm actually embarrassed about, because I can still visualise what my first one looked like. But at the time, I was just so delighted to have one. I like you mentioned that it can be really nerve-wracking to first hit that publish button. And but I know that I remember my husband looking at my website and saying, "It's quite a lot of text on it, Louise." And I was like, "Yes, but I need to have all this information there." And I really hadn't grasped the concept in online presence of
white space,
the white space and the use of paragraphs, and maybe that you don't need to say everything.
Yeah,
to give people an essence. And it was text hell. I mean, literally, there were walls of text. And this was even at a time when people were still maybe not using mobile to get.
So it wasn't mobile friendly.
Oh, I doubt it. Yeah. But even if it was, I mean, even on a large monitor, it looked like walls of text, and the text was tiny, tiny, tiny.
And do you know what? Do you know? I think that's something that, as editors, we're generally quite guilty of doing that, because we work with words, so we want to explain everything, so we want to put everything down with words rather than thinking. I think now with asking how mine has changed, I thought much, much harder about the user experience navigating content.
Absolutely.
Of how my content was presented, of, you know, logical structures, logical journeys through it. Mm. It all sounds really intimidating, I think, but actually it's just using your common sense and thinking about, if I was looking at this website as somebody who wants to hire an editor, what information would I want and where would I want to find it? And so just having that in my head changed a lot about how I built it. I took advice and read lots of stuff and listened to lots of
people. So did I. It was an evolving, like you said, it's been a living thing. Mm-hmm. But I remember also at the time I was doing different kind of editorial work. And of course, as becoming a line editor, a fiction line editor over the years, I slid into a space where I was helping authors I wasn't just looking for specific things within existing content. My clients come to me now to help me make sure that every word counts. And one of the things I often say to clients is, trust your reader here. You don't need to give them all those words. Like, yeah. give them the essence of it. Show rather than tell what you want to do here. And so as I developed those skills, I think I was able to take them to my own website as well.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Whereas I think I was just, at the time when I first set up my website, I was so embroiled in, I was doing a lot of academic proofreading, social science stuff, economics, politics, philosophy, often really dense handbooks or monographs where it was perfectly acceptable to have lots of text and long paragraphs. And that's the world of words I lived in. And as I've become more of a stylistic practitioner, I think that's affected the way I treat my own content too.
Yeah.
And of course, I was just going to say that that's backed up by what you said, by hearing the same messaging being given by other marketing professionals and advisors who were saying, yeah, that's the way to go.
Yeah. And it's interesting because one of the things I think I grappled with, and I know other editors do, is where you're sort of, you've not just got one type of client. You've got quite a specific niche, one type of client, crime, mystery, fiction, blah, blah, blah. I have a few different types. You know, they might be publishers, they might be, you know, organizations, they might be academics, whatever. And it's tailoring the content within their sort of buckets, if you like.
Yeah, yeah.
And knowing that it's okay to change your tone of voice very slightly in those areas so that it sort of chimes with how they might expect to read about what they want.
It's like branding within branding almost, because you want maybe a different voice depending on which particular area of your website somebody's visiting, so that it speaks to those individuals.
Yeah. But I think starting out, you don't need to worry about all that really starting out. Just get yourself a website out there because that's the key thing that everyone's going to come back to. And you can, like we say, it's living, so you can build it out. And we've both done that over however many years now.
Thing that you mentioned there was that you didn't use a developer. You did it yourself. Mm. And I was the same. Which is probably why it didn't look so great in the early days. But I did, because running your own business has expenses to it, doesn't it? You know, like being an editor isn't free. You need certain software, you need certain platforms, and you need to be able to do certain things. And so knowing that you could host your own website or pay someone to host it on your behalf, but that it doesn't have to cost you thousands or even tens of thousands of pounds.
Absolutely.
Is something I've been really grateful about. You know, I do all my own.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I haven't built the platform.
No.
But it's just a drag and drop.
But look what you can do with a drag and drop. And when you look at them now, you get amazing, beautiful websites. You know, you look at, there's no excuse to have something that looks old and clunky. You don't need to worry about, you know, if you're not investing, if you can't invest a lot of money or time in it. You can still have something very sleek and very beautiful and very professional.
Yeah.
Doesn't need to have millions of pages on it. You just need to be there, you know.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have, I mean, I built mine on wordpress.org. I would not have attempted that myself if I hadn't been in that community and knowing that I had the support of other people there to guide me when I was, you know, having problems with it, which of course you always do. But if I'd never done that, I would have definitely built another one on another drag and drop platform and been perfectly happy with it.
Yeah.
We don't all have to spend hours and hours and hours and months slogging away through tech, learning tech, if it's not what you're interested in,
That's right. And there are platforms like Weebly, which is part of, or it's become Square
now,
And so there are those options. So here's another question. How often do you update your website?
So that's changed as well. I went through a period like you do, as I wrote loads of blogs. So I was updating it constantly with...
You were creating
a lot of content, updating with blogs. Now, I'm still getting updated regularly, but it's with podcast episodes. So our podcast episodes update. And that's obviously good for Google indexing and Google search, because it's seen that your site's been updated and everything. I haven't written blog posts for a couple of years now, but I know that my site's still getting refreshed. And I'm in there quite regularly tweaking things, content on pages and maybe changing a few things. Nothing massive, but I'm always fiddling with it a little bit, I think it was fair to say.
Yeah.
But if I don't have time or if I don't think about it for a little while, I know that the podcast is still going on to it, so it's still being refreshed.
Yeah, you're still getting those regular refreshes and updates,
what about
aren't you?
So yeah, still... you're still writing regular content, aren't you?
Less blog content than I used to, just because I've kind of like, I've got the core content that I want now. There are still things I want to write when I've just haven't got the time at the moment. But like you, though, I always make sure that I'm including updates about our podcast content. And I love fiddling with my website. Yeah. So I do kind of go in every now and then and have a little twiddle or a tweak just to... Oh, also, I think there was a few years back, I created certain pages and I've just been keeping an eye on whether those pages are ever looked at. And then more recently, I was reading this fantastic blog post from Andy Crestodina, who I know you're a fan of too, at Orbit Media Studios, and about how to make your website AI friendly. And so I used that as an opportunity just to think about whether I was following really up-to-date practice about, you know, were there tweaks I could make here and there. So just a simple thing that he suggested you do is if you've got one of those, if you've got a contact form with where you ask your person to indicate how they found out about you, make sure to include an AI.
Yeah.
Or ChatGPT an AI or GPT in there, because it's just a way of gathering information about how people are finding you. And there was some other advice that he had, which I won't go into now, but it was just, so I've been thinking about that as well, as, you know, just how, to what degree is my website, ultimately the my priority is to make sure that it's human friendly, because those are my clients. But I've also have been thinking about what I can do to make sure that that content also works AI as well. Just in case people are using AI to try and find me, are they going to find the information I want them to? So I would say I probably go into my website at least once a week to update it. But
and I think it's worth pointing out to people who think, oh my God, this all sounds a bit scary and it sounds a lot and it's complex. It doesn't need to be. And our websites have evolved over, you know, 15, 20 years, really. We didn't start out. If you look at our websites now, they're far, far from what they were to begin with. And you don't, that what we have now isn't a starting point. It's where you might end up, you know, after years of working and developing and what have you.
That reminds me of that thing that we've talked about in when we've done episodes about marketing and time management, and that mantra that we have of just one thing. Yeah. So you start with just one thing. So even if it's just getting your homepage right and some core text that explains what solutions you are bringing to what problems you're solving, you know, what's your top, who are you serving? Why will someone land on that page and think, well, this person looks interesting. They've got the solutions to my needs. You know, if that's just the place you start, then fine. You don't need to have that page and 120 blog posts and 70,000 podcast episodes.
You might never write a blog post in your life.
You never get there.
Some people don't. They're not interested in it. And some people love it. And it does, you know, neither one is better than the other. It's just how you go about what you enjoy and how you want to relate to your potential clients. And, you know, it's part of a bigger picture. I think people get quite focused on, oh, if I've got a website, I have to blog. You don't, but you do have to update it. But think about what content you want to produce. And
you have to I think you have to have content that tells the visitor why you're the answer.
Absolutely.
And someone else isn't. And that might take the form of a blog or a video or some audio content.
Or just paragraphs on a web page. Yeah.
On a page. You have to have content that isn't... I mean, we've talked... this is another thing we've chatted about before, but that's this idea that content is, your website isn't really about you.
Yeah.
It's about,
yeah, absolutely. About, and that's a good thing to have in your head, actually. And I think probably when I look back at my, my first one, it was all about me, you know, because that's our starting point. You want to tell people about yourself, but you want to show how you're serving other people as well, don't you?
Yeah. So here's one that I think will be of interest to a lot of people. And there isn't, again, I think our answers are going to be different. But do you get work from your website?
I do, but it's not the bulk of my work. It's definitely not. I'm more likely to get work from indie authors through my site. And some...
Denise, actually, it's probably worth you mentioning
what
your
core
specialisms are.
Yeah.
Because that will explain why.
I work largely with ELT publishers. So publishers that produce content to teach English as a foreign language. So traditional publishing, if you'd like to think of it that way. I also work with large organisations, agencies, comms agencies, think tanks, that sort of thing. So that's a different sort of metric. And I work with indie authors and academics. So I've kind of got like four kind of buckets. And I would say that the publishers are not the ones that find me through the website. I've got a network with them. I find them in other places. And they find me now. I'm quite established there. Indie authors and, to some extent, the academic and organisations may well find me through there. But it's much smaller numbers.
But that's not to say that those academic
checked
publishers
my website,
won't
have
checked
and
your
I know
website.
They do. And I know they do because I've met them. You know, I've met them at conferences or something. And they've passed comment on, oh, I read this blog of yours, or I listened to your podcast or whatever. So
that's a good reminder, isn't it? That just, even though your website may not be a direct source of work for some client types, it goes back to that point we were talking about the value of having a website, because people might
absolutely
be using it as a verification.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Because they'll still refer to it, even if they didn't find you that way. They'll still go to, like you say, to verify who you are. What about you?
Yeah.
You're completely different, really, aren't you?
My website, I would say, is the single biggest driver behind my business. But that comes down to our client types. So I work solely for independent authors. And even within that, as you know, I've got a very distinct niche. I worked only for crime fiction, thriller and mystery writers, suspense writers. So I need to be visible, be found. Now I do advertise in directories. I get a little bit, I get work periodically from the Chartered Institute of Editing and Proofreadings, Directory of Editorial Services. And but even, and increasingly I've had a few people within the last 2 or 3 months tell me that they found me via
amazing, isn't it?
AI. But that content
from your website
that AI is pulling up is from my website.
Yeah.
So it always goes back to the website. So I would and also my experience mirrors that pocket of work that you do for independent authors. And so I think my take on that is, if you're going for the indie author market, regardless of your genre or specialism, you absolutely a resume isn't going to cut it, because you need to be, it's not about you going directly to them, it's about
absolutely
being in a space
where
they can
find you. Because
you
can be sure they'll be trawling the internet looking for who's out there, who looks professional, who speaks to me, who does the sort of thing that I have, you know, in terms of genre.
And they're not looking,
they don't
care where you live either. So if they care what language you speak, because obviously if they've written in English, then they want a person who can edit in English. But so I'm not looking
people
to be found by crime and mystery writers in Norfolk. I want to be found by people writing in that genre, in English, anywhere in the world.
And so you got to make sure that your website speaks to them and can be found by them. Yeah, yeah. So important.
Yeah. Yeah, end off. And without that, I don't have a business. I honestly don't think that I would be able to compete globally without a website, because that's not how those people, that's people are using search tools to find people like me.
It's all part of it.
And it's
going back to that thing about, you know, business planning. You know, where are my clients? How do I connect with potential clients? How are they going to find me?
Yeah. How are they going to find me?
Doesn't matter where they are. Yeah. You've identified that demographic. Your website has to do the work to connect you with them, really. Oh, that's very deep and meaningful, isn't it?
Well, that's a good place to wrap up then, I think. We really hope you enjoyed this bonus episode of me and Denise chatting about our own personal experience of websites. And I hope it's given you the confidence to make the right decisions for you as well. If you're an editor or a proofreader, thank you as always, not just for listening and spreading the word, but also for supporting us. It's thanks to you that we can create more episodes and invest in professional post-production.
I think we'll finish it there. Okay.
Let's do that.
She's been Louise.
She's been Denise.
See you again soon. Bye.
Join us again soon. Bye.
Do you know how long that was? 31 minutes. Louise, that was completely effortless. That's half an hour's content of us just sitting having a conversation. I'm just going to stop this here.
I don't want to use that as a fucking bonus episode. It's too good.